Welcome to the University of Limerick Research Impact Podcast Series. I'm Christine Brennan. I'm joined today by Dr. Anne-Marie Ryan, Lecturer in Business Marketing at the Kemmy Business School, and Niamh McGowan, Course Director of the MA Festive Arts Programme at the Irish World Academy of Music and Dance. Anne-Marie and Niamh are part of a group of researchers working alongside the School of Architecture in UL, who are applying a design studio education model to the spheres policy making and innovation. Anne-Marie, can you tell me, what do you mean though by design studio education model?
Well, this idea of bringing a group of graduates or other participants to a studio model really means that they're coming together in a single space and time. And working in a studio model really means kind of full time in one single space, looking at a single problem or theme, usually in an interdisciplinary kind of way, or certainly that's how the model is being used more and more in higher education contexts. So, you know, for instance, the OAMK labs in Oulu in the north of Finland, it runs over a whole term at Oulu University, where different students come together and form teams during the 12 weeks. And for them, it's kind of conceived of as a pre-incubator program where these individual students would come together but would leave with new startup ideas. So the studio model really counters our traditional university education model in the sense of, you know, 2-hour lecture over 12 weeks for one particular subject, where you actually have students working full time in a lab environment, full days, maybe into the night, 24-hour access to the studio and so on would be quite normal, and constantly and iteratively working on a single problem or theme in interdisciplinary groups.
Niamh, can I bring you in here from the creative arts point of view? What do you mean by a design studio education model?
Well, I think anyone who's had experience of working in a lab environment almost becomes converted quite quickly, because it's quite extraordinary how much you can do and how quickly you travel when you bring people together in that shared environment. And when you really create that focus around, as what Anne-Marie was saying, around a shared theme, a shared idea, the advances that can be made, the ways in which the different disciplines move quickly together, really does demonstrate the value of this. In terms of the creative arts and their particular contribution to a design studio model, I think that, you know, like any discipline, it brings its own expertise, it brings its own way of working. Certainly, I think, Anne-Marie, you'll agree, in terms of the IU Limerick lab that we'll talk about later, we had dancers, for example, who were working with economists and working with architects in terms of thinking about ways in which we could reimagine the role of creativity in the city. And it was extraordinary to see the dancer sit the economists down and really say, no, you have to look up, you have to look around, you have to look at how people are experiencing the city with their bodies in order to understand how you can make plans for this. So that was not necessarily a skill or a way of thinking that those economists would have tapped into, but the dancer was able to really bring them on that journey, and they were able to move very, very quickly together after that.
So you mentioned Limerick City there. Does Limerick provide a unique model for effective collaboration to inform policy and program development? And how do you influence policy?
Well, I think we're very lucky that we are based in Limerick and the University of Limerick, because I think Limerick has a very strong reputation for collaboration across many different kinds of agencies. Maybe it goes back to our days with Shannon Development or so on, that kind of regional development has happened across agencies, you know, for multiple years. So the local authority now work quite closely with different industry groups and so on in engineering and in innovation. So we have that kind of capacity in the region to work closely together, maybe a sense of a shared kind of common problems to be solved and future visions. And in the University of Limerick, I think we're very lucky because, of course, like any other university, we're made up of many different disciplines. But it seems to me anyway, over these many years of working interdisciplinary, that it comes with relative ease for us to work in an interdisciplinary way. And so we've had the work from the outset of the School of Architecture, which has really laid such an important foundation for us with their IUs, which has been this particular model that they devised to work closely with the local authority in particular, where they would work on a specific problem that the local authority would have. So they would bring their students and bring their knowledge to bear on a particular issue that Limerick was facing. So they set out a very important framework and a set of ground rules for how these particular intelligence units would work, and the collaboration between the policymakers, the local authority workers, and the students, and bringing other stakeholders to bear on that. So we have this really important framework from the School of Architecture, which we are looking to build, and we have iteratively worked the model in various kind of contexts and various themes over the years in terms of culture or health, health research, livable cities, healthy cities, and so on. So the theme has evolved every year.
So from these intelligence unit groups that you've been working on, are there any examples of programs or policies that have been the result of these collaborations?
So one of the programs that we worked on was grown out of the IU Culture Lab, which was funded by Limerick City and County Council and which was held throughout the summer of 2015. During this time, and I think this is actually quite important and it builds on what Anne-Marie was saying, we were based for most of it in Ormston House, which is a gallery space downtown, but which crucially, and I think it's just actually so important, it has a big open glass window. So everybody could see what we were doing and they would pop in and they would ask, what are you up to? And we were able to really engage with the people on the street as we were working. So that's, I think, another way in which Limerick provides a really important context. So one of the programs that we developed during this lab in the IU in Ormston House was a new policy which reframed the ways in which artists and creative professionals engaged with social welfare services. So we were looking very much at the lived experience of creative professionals and artists, particularly at the early stages of their career. So we could see, for example, we were looking at, well, how does someone develop their artistic career? How do they actually fund their artistic career? And we were looking very much at the reliance, the reported reliance on social welfare, that social welfare was in fact operating as a form of arts funding in this country. However, it was getting in the way of people being able to develop their careers. So for example, if I'm an artist and I'm working constantly and I'm working hard, I'm contributing hugely to the overall creative profile of my city, for example. However, I'm reliant on social welfare as my main source of income. If I get an opportunity to take a grant, take a fellowship, take a short-term work contract, for example, I then endanger my ability to protect my income. So we could see there was a mismatch. There was kind of good money being used badly or being used less effectively as it could be. So we very much looked at, with economists, with artists, and with a whole kind of range of different stakeholders, we looked at a new model, which we titled the Creative Work Fellowship, which would essentially reframe that social welfare payment as a creative work fellowship. You could hop on and hop off as you needed to. So if you had a particular opportunity that would then help you to drive your own career forward, you would be able to take that up without endangering your overall income stream. So it was very much informed by an understanding of the overall social welfare budget, the policies and priorities of the Department of Social Protection. And that was something very much that the economists brought to the table, but also hugely informed by the actual ways in which artistic careers are driven forward, and then also the priorities of something like the Department of Arts and the way in which we want to develop creative cities, as well as broader EU policies. We want to make our cities habitable places that support artists living within them. So we were kind of drawing all of these different strands together to create this new policy idea that reflected and serviced the needs of all of those different groups together.
You know, in a sense, Niamh could describe that same sort of set of outputs that may have happened over a 12-month period after a series of different kinds of research projects done perhaps in a linear way by different disciplines feeding into one another eventually, or as part of a larger, let's say, European-funded project or so on. But what happened was that over a period of, was it 6-8 weeks in Limerick City, that we were able to sort of hothouse these ideas, but in a way that kept them to be robust and informed by multiple disciplinary and policy priorities. So this is what I find really interesting, that we can start to see these different priorities, this very disparate, very complex environment where arts funding is actually coming through the Department of Social Welfare, the Department of Education, the Department of the Arts themselves, Department of Health, and many more. It's a very, very complex environment. But in a lab, you can put all of that together, and where you can have a dancer stand in the middle of the room and declare something that for her is really, really important, and where an economist is made to listen to that and change how they tabulate all these, you know, really mass figures and so on. So it's how these things are put in relation to one another that is the magic of a lab, really.
You know, very often the fight is important. And we wrote about this in it. We published an article reflecting on this in Cultural Trends, where it would be so easy for one group working in isolation to kind of take off in a particular direction and forget the shared priorities. So sometimes, you know, things got a bit cranky in the lab and people were saying, no, that doesn't reflect my experience, or no, you can't do that, or no, you have to justify that. You can't just expect to get money for nothing, you know. And people had to answer hard questions that sometimes are taken for granted, or they're the kind of sacred cows within a particular discipline. But when you kind of create that friction, you move faster and you actually get a much more robust and workable result at the end.
So I think it's very interesting to see that real evidence-based policymaking can happen quite quickly when you're bringing all those collaborators together. What I'm interested to know around collaboration is, can it be taught? Is there a way to impart these skills to other disciplines in other areas?
This is something, I suppose, that's been on our minds all along. You know, as we've seen these different groups of graduates or near graduates coming into a room, working and collaborating alongside different stakeholders and the teaching team, if you like. We've observed different things. We've observed instances of amazing collaboration. For instance, one of the teams I've often seen work very well together are architects and economists. Somehow they're happy to work on a similar kind of systemic way of thinking, a macro level scale. Whereas we find the kind of occupational therapists or a marketer or a dancer can work quite well together because they're very interested in the lived experience. But in an IU context, we want these to inform one another. So you'll have cross-disciplinary teams that will form, but because they're actually quite interested in the same scale of object, if you like. But how can it be taught? So we've been experimenting, if you like. And I suppose from now forward, we want to put more thought into what are the different skills that are actually enabling people to collaborate well in these environments. And it's something that Gorman talks about in his research of kind of interactional expertise. So this is actually how you learn to interact better across different disciplines. And interestingly, he says things like, well, common language isn't actually an input into this sort of way of working, but it's actually an output or an outcome, perhaps. So we learn how to, in a very fragmented way at the beginning, to collaborate. And we have these critical moments where, you know, a dancer or an artist will stand up and declare something and it will stop everyone in their tracks. And these are actually really important moments. So the friction, the tension, being able to sort of speak to one another, you know, understanding each other's language, but wanting to learn and wanting to understand each other. So we really want to work more and more around this. And actually, one of our next projects for Niamh and I and other researchers that we've gathered together at the university is to develop this idea of interdisciplinary collaborative capacity, ID call cap for short. And we're going to spend some time actually developing what we mean by this specific capacity.
It is crucial that we embed this in the university as well, because we are seeing more and more that some of the great global questions of our time, for example, ethical computing and technology or climate change, these are not questions that are going to be solved without interdisciplinary collaboration, that we need to understand, for example, science, but we need to understand human engagement and experience. We need to understand meaning making. If we're thinking about national security, we need to understand issues of stories and identities and narratives that people build up around themselves. So I think that this is both important for the future of research. I think it's important for the future of our researchers that we are developing here in the University of Limerick. And I think it is an important capacity that we allow students and faculty as well, and we've worked more with faculty than students to date, to allow them to recognize that in themselves. And I suppose that's why we're keen to identify this particular skill of ID call cap, because it is a particular type of capacity, finding out, okay, I have this question, who do I need? How can I understand what you're doing so that I can bring it into play in terms of, you know, where and how do these different knowledges fit together? Research is intensely personal. It's highly tied in with people's sense of themselves, of their identity as researchers. Different research skills will come into play in solving interdisciplinary questions at different times of the process as well. So you're not all doing the same thing at the same time. Research also looks different in different disciplines. So I remember, for example, the economists were getting really cranky because the architects and dancers were going off wandering and thinking and talking. And they were like, oh, they're not at work. You know, why are they not at work? But that's work. And then they realized. So I think there's a sense of a need to understand, well, where does the work happen and how does it get brought into that shared environment? So a framework, I think, is important for that. And that's why I think this module will help people to understand what they can do to bring that interdisciplinarity into the room.
Yeah, I think it's certainly a real life skill. I can see it standing to you for years to come to be able to understand it, to work with all of these different groups. Could I ask you a personal question, though? What brought you both to this area and brought you both together so closely?
Well, my own research looks at the relationship between business and the arts. So in a sense, I've always kind of conceived of myself personally, as Nave was saying, our research is a very personal thing, as a kind of a boundary spanner between different disciplines and wanting to understand what makes the collaboration between the disciplines work. So that's been my whole research kind of question for the last 12, 15 years. And, you know, from my own PhD research, I looked at instances of sponsorship or business engagement to the arts in Galway. And I suppose then meeting Nave, and she'll have her own story, but again, I sort of saw in her kind of another boundary spanner of somebody who was not just completely a scholar in their own discipline, but wanting and always to look across to other disciplines and understand what was happening there and bring that back. And I think that's maybe something that we share.
When Anne-Marie called me a boundary spanner first, I thought she was insulting me. So there was a bit of language to be learned there. But I think you find people that you can work well together with. And I do think there is a certain danger of Anne-Marie and I sitting in a room and, you know, not leaving for 24 hours because we've come up with 17 new funding proposals. So I think, you know, you find people in the university that you just work well with and you bounce ideas off. I have had some really positive interdisciplinary experiences in my career. So when I finished my PhD, I worked with the UCD's Innovation Academy. That was actually a structured program in innovation and entrepreneurship. But I was really annoyed that the humanities and the arts were really kind of absent in terms of the way that they were thinking about innovation. And I could really just see this opportunity in terms of what they could bring. Because I really feel in terms of research, we're all doing the same thing. You know, whether I'm in the Bernal Institute or the Irish World Academy, I'm just looking carefully and trying to see something. So we're all doing that together. So it's really just about trying to see how we can tune into those different frequencies. I'm genuinely passionate about wanting to bring the arts and humanities back into the center of research more generally. You know, I think we've fallen into a certain trap of seeing it as being perhaps less hard as a discipline or a set of disciplines than, for example, the sciences or technologies, the STEM subjects. But I think we do really need to invest in STEAM because we're always dealing with humans. We're always dealing with human responses, human interactions in the way that we're using science, in the way that we're using technology. So I think that we need to advocate for the role of the arts and humanities and social sciences back in the center of the table.
I'd just like to sort of say at the university, I think it's wonderful that we do have this sort of sense of freedom and where the boundaries between these different disciplines are, I think, easily crossable by researchers at the University of Limerick.
So you've been listening to two very adept boundary spanners, Dr. Anne-Marie Ryan and Dr. Nave Nickgown from the University of Limerick. This research is supported by the Irish Research Council, Limerick City and County Council, the University of Limerick, Johnson & Johnson and the European Commission. If you'd like to find out more about Research Impact, go to our website at ul.ie/researchimpact.